Well, welcome to Local Matters. We have a couple of special guests today. Scott Williams is Chief Operating Officer at Cookeville Regional Medical Center, and Scott Lethe is Chief Clinical Officer at CRMC. And wow, what a month we've been through. Putnam County has been hit by disastrous tornadoes, and then coronavirus aired its ugly head. You gentlemen have been busy.
Very, very nice to be here. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being on the air with us. And for both of you, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background to start with? Scott Williams, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Dr. Bell. I'm Scott Williams. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at Cookeville Regional Medical Center. Been there beginning my sixth year here, but originally from Johnson City. I have a baccalaureate in nursing, a master's in nursing, and a master's in healthcare administration, and I've been in healthcare since 1983, doing everything from being an ICU nurse all the way up to being CEO of a smaller hospital, and again, really enjoying the opportunity to be the Chief Operating Officer here.
And Scott Lethe?
Hey, thanks for having us. Clinical background, nursing school, bachelor's in nursing, bachelor's of arts. Nursing was the second trip to college. Some strange region. I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. Master's in healthcare administration, a couple of certifications in administration and nursing leadership. Going on my third year starting in August.
Hard to believe.
It goes so quickly, especially with the couple of weeks we're having.
Yes.
And thoroughly enjoying being here in Cookeville, enjoying the community setting versus some of the more recent grind of the for-profit world that several of us have worked in.
Wow. Well, you guys have both had phenomenal experience, and that experience has been tested a little bit here in the last few weeks. So let's talk first about the tornado and what a shock to all of us. But to the medical center, a special kind of shock. How many patients were treated at the medical center?
For the tornado itself, that lovely Tuesday 2 a.m. event that started, we saw 90 patients related to the event. And overall that day, we saw 150.
Wow. Wow. And some had to be sent on to advanced trauma somewhere else?
Yeah, we do our best to stabilize and transfer, since we don't do what we call level one trauma or very high acuity trauma due to specialty services. We transferred out 14. All the feedback, very positive. Some went to Knoxville, some went to Nashville once weather allowed. And we also sent folks down to Chattanooga. And the feedback was the fantastic work that the team did. All the patients we sent out had positive outcomes.
Well, it's it was shocking to everybody, and the response time and the response rates were good. It wasn't just the emergency room at the hospital, was it, Scott? Surgery was involved. How fast did it take to ramp up all of that, and who all was involved?
Well, it was a significant challenge because we once we got the notification that the disaster had occurred, we started our disaster plan and actually started that over the phone while folks were getting in. But the biggest challenge that we had was, number one, this series of storms knocked out long distance for our community. And as a result, a lot of folks that we needed to get a hold of in adjacent counties weren't able to be reached. On top of that, it, as many people know, caused havoc with our cell phone service. So a lot of folks we either could not get a hold of or we had great difficulty getting a hold of. But I will tell you that our team pulled together and just stepped up and did it, stepped up and started working the problem, getting ready for patients. We had a lot of folks that did come in, and surprisingly, of course, a lot of people in the surrounding communities woke up and realized sometime during the night, realized something's wrong. And when they tried to reach out to us, they couldn't get a hold of us and realized, oh, wow, something's really wrong. And they came in. And so I will tell you that our team did a tremendous job. They never heard a complaint, never heard an issue. Everybody got what they needed when they needed it. We surged appropriately, and we had great support from our medical staff as well. We called our medical staff. They were here on the spot, and they were helping us. So it was a really great team effort.
Well, and Scott, your nurses had a full day, I'm sure, as did many others. But talk about the nursing response, but also just about all of the sections of the hospital that had to be involved. Clearly, imaging had to be brought up to speed.
Yeah, when you look at radiology, whether it's a specialty CAT scan or other procedures, we can do what we call a fast scan with an ultrasound at the bedside, look at the basic chest and abdominal cavity for folks. Our medical staff do that. But the response was just, I would say, bottom up, not so much top down. I mean, every individual in that facility helps us take care of patients. You had folks, whether they were a transporter or member of our environmental services, gathering wheelchairs, gathering stretchers, prepping things, staging, helping us out there. We had nurses come out of our nursery and come down to the emergency room to help out because we had several children with some very significant traumatic injuries, and they came down and helped out. It didn't matter where you were. If you had a clinical skill, you came. It didn't matter if you had to push a gurney or do, you know, help transfuse vital fluids or other things. Everybody came together, pulled together, and just functioned as a team. Quite an amazing thing to see.
You had outpatient physical therapists, which helped move patients onto the CT scan and off the CT scan to X-ray from X-ray. You had people that never worked in dietary before help deliver meals and help deliver food to the staff that was working. So you had people. We have what's called a labor pool. You report to the labor pool, and you can do almost anything based on anything from your skill set to just being a pair of hands. And remember, during all this, we were currently holding 20 patients in our emergency department waiting for a bed when the tornado struck in the community. And we moved those patients upstairs into the hallway. So on top of all this, we had a full house that we were taking care of anyway. So they had to do every floor had multiple jobs to do to take care of all the patients, both coming in and that were already there.
Yeah, this is flu season and all kinds of other seasons, and it's a time when a hospital is at as full as it wants to be usually. So that was quite a feat.
Yeah. To the credit of not only our community and the patients and the staff, during this moment where you're upstairs and you're rounding and you're checking on departments and staff and patients also. I remember literally almost running past a patient in the hall, stopped, talked to her, patted her on the shoulder, said, thanks for your patience, and moved on. But we didn't hear one surly comment, even from the patients that were waiting for rooms for several hours, that we had to put in an overflow position because the realization that there was something exceptionally going on that needed to be tended to, which was greatly appreciated.
It was a challenge, and I think they recognized it. This is Local Matters, and we are talking to Scott Williams, the Chief Operating Officer, and Scott Lethe, the Chief Clinical Officer at Cookeville Regional Medical Center, about the disaster relief, disaster response, and then the relief. So let's continue that a little bit. I noticed the day after, outside the front door, there was a line that seemed to be as long as it could be of people trying to give blood. That was a wonderful response, wasn't it?
Yeah, the community, I would say it's an overwhelming response. And to the credit of the Tennessee Tech students, we saw a lot of purple, whether it was nursing students or just students in between classes lining up next to the blood mobile the first day to donate blood. We had, by the time we got there, literally 8:30 at night, we're trying to encourage people to come back the following day. And we had one person said, I've been here 6 hours, I'm not leaving.
Wow.
So the response was phenomenal. We opened up another site the second day. So we had donation sites on hospital grounds the second day as well. We got about 1,200 units from the community is the feedback that we had from the blood donor network, which would be the downtown location, but also the sites here at the facility that we had. So a giant thank you to the community for thinking of everybody else.
But let me remind everybody that that blood does not last long. And right now, nationwide, there is a huge blood shortage because people are canceling because of the fears of the coronavirus.
Right.
We need blood nationwide. Now, right now in our community, we currently have 160 units, which is really good. But I will tell you that over time, the nation will need blood. And if you're healthy, you please reach out to the blood donation services and step up and contribute if you can.
Yeah, it's not just one unit, one patient. Depending on the condition of the patient, they can take an exceptional volume of blood. As we said, we treated a lot of trauma patients, and we had one patient we literally, forgive the comment, but we literally brought a cooler full of blood and transfused most of that cooler into that patient.
Wow.
So it's not just one and done.
And that kind of an emergency is likely to continue under our current circumstance. We'll be back and talk about that in just a minute. But let's talk also about about the state of readiness. I know the hospital participates in what's called LEPC, Local Emergency Planning. And how did that go? Were we as ready as we could have been, you think, for the emergency?
I think we did an outstanding job, but I will tell you that we're never satisfied. We always feel that we can do better. We practice a lot. We have routine emergency management meetings in our hospital. We do tabletop exercises. We do community drills. And it's not just for tornadoes. We practice multiple different kinds of disasters in order to be ready.
Well, this is Local Matters. We are talking to Scott Williams and Scott Lethe from Cookeville Regional Medical Center. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
Welcome back to Education Matters. This show is about education in general, and today, boy, have we got an educational issue with us. We can't emphasize the impact of the coronavirus on our nation and on our local areas, both the economy, but certainly the healthcare system. So let's talk a little bit about the coronavirus and about how CRMC is preparing. I know we've already got reality in front of us, but talk about the preparations that are going on at CRMC at this point.
Well, Dr. Bell, first and foremost, let me emphasize that the coronavirus is a very serious disease. It is not, I repeat, it is not an old person's disease. This can affect both young and old. It is a virus that we do not have immunity for. And as a result, it is a very serious respiratory infection that will affect a lot of people in the United States before we're done. And in preparation, we have made what preparations we can, but with the growth of the virus, I will tell you that every hospital in the United States is not prepared enough for us to handle the onslaught of patients unless we can do what the federal government wants us to do, and that is flatten the curve and socially isolate, because we only have so many ventilators, we only have so much personal protective equipment, And I want to emphasize to folks, if the nurses get this, they're not going to be at the hospital to take care of patients, and we won't be able to take care of the patients that need our care. So it is extremely important, and I think I could spend this whole time just emphasizing this, and that is socially distance yourself, wash your hands for at least 20 seconds with soap and water, watch what you touch, clean your surfaces, and stay at home. Stay at home. It's an inconvenience, but please do your best to stay at home and only get out when it's absolutely necessary.
I know we are doing a conference tomorrow that was scheduled. It's an international conference, and it was scheduled in Nashville, and we're now doing it entirely electronically. So there'll be people from Europe in the conference and from all over the U.S., but none of us are going to be anywhere near any of the others. And I don't think coronavirus can travel through these through the internet or through microphones, but we don't know enough about it to say for sure. So I'm glad that we're doing this in a true social distancing way.
That's correct. And again, we have the state, the nation, we all have limited resources, and we've got to be able to conserve those limited resources. One thing I really want to emphasize also is we have made changes to our visitation policy. And please check your newspaper, call the hospital regarding those changes. And we're going to be looking at further restricting visitation in the future, because not only do we want to protect the public, but we also want to protect our patients and we want to protect our staff. So we have already tightened visitation, and we may tighten it further. Please be aware of that. And it's not because we don't love our community. It's because we love our community.
Absolutely right.
That we have to create these protections for everybody.
And that's why schools have been closed, and why many other shutdowns have taken place in these last few weeks. Scott, talk about nurses and how they are challenged in this kind of a thing. They don't know exactly about this virus, and unfortunately, it doesn't show its face sometimes till folks have already been exposed.
Correct. We follow the CDC recommended guidelines, which have changed almost daily since this has been coming in for the last couple of weeks. And we do our best to meet those guidelines, put on the appropriate, what we call PPE or personal protective equipment, make sure the correct type of mask is worn. We're currently using contact precautions, which is what we do for every patient, but also what we call droplet precaution, like you would with flu. It's not an airborne disease at the moment, from the best knowledge that we have. So the type of mask that you need is dependent upon the treatment you're doing. If you're aerosolizing an item for a specific type of treatment, then you need what we call an N95 mask. These are the ones which a lot of manufacturers either don't have. We have one of our primary suppliers. They've been unavailable since January. You know, so we are actually dipping into, lack of a better word, our disaster stock at this point.
Nationwide.
Absolutely. So the staff, in terms of their preparations, doing their best to be informed. We're doing our best to over-communicate, not only with the patients and families, as Scott alluded to, with the restrictions. And I have to reiterate his statement. We just had a case, I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it to make the point. We had people who were being tested for it. We make an effort to isolate those individuals, as Scott said, to protect the staff taking care of them, reverse isolate, in some cases, the patient, so we're not going to continue to possibly expose them, as well as their family and visitors. So if you're being tested at the moment, you don't get a visitor. So we're getting equipment. We're showing people how to FaceTime. The staff are helping with FaceTime or other two-way video teleconferencing with family members. We had a family member who we specifically said in the emergency room, no visitor due to XYZ, and we literally had to ask them and escort them out of the room upstairs because they did not follow the direction, they did not follow the requests, and then they also gave misinformation to the people screening at the door and continued into the facility. That is a disservice to every person they come in contact to. we truly respect the desire for the concern for your loved one and that you want to be with them. But on the other side, please also realize if you're not well, you can't take us on, take care of anybody else. So the staff, again, we're doing our best. We're wearing our PPEs. We're making sure to protect the staff, to communicate with the staff, do the right thing at the right time for the right reason, conserve our supplies as best as we can. This is not going to be done in 30, 60, 90 days, folks. And as already everyone knows, there is a national shortage of acute supplies. So don't stockpile things at home under your sink when you've got healthcare workers, nurses, doctors, radiology techs, nursing assistants, everybody that's going to come in contact with these people need this to maintain community safety.
This is Local Matters. We are talking to Scott Lethe and Scott Williams from Cookeville Regional Medical Center. To either one of you, let's assume that someone begins to feel ill and has some of the symptoms that are commonly associated with coronavirus. What should they do? How do they approach the medical community, whether it's their doctor or the emergency room? What is the next step?
Well, the first step is to know your symptoms. There is a, you know, remember, A, it's allergy season. So runny nose, watery eyes, not most likely not going to be coronavirus. If you have a fever and body aches, it's most likely going to be the flu, which is also viral, when people are going to want prescriptions for Tamiflu and things of that nature. Coronavirus is a virus. Tamiflu does not work on it. Okay. Coronavirus is going to be shortness of breath, fever, and cough. So there is a significant difference between, you know, problems with flu and body aches, and maybe your stomach is acting a little wonky, and of course being allergy seasons with everything blooming around us and the temperature warming up. So if you have symptoms or you think you have symptoms, the first request is to call your primary physician or practitioner, share with them the symptoms that you have, and get direction. Because just because you have symptoms does not necessarily mean that you need to be tested. Look at the CDC guidelines. Have you been out of the country? Have you been around someone who's been out of the country? Have you been exposed to someone who potentially may have symptoms that have matched that within the last 14 days? You know, with any illness or sickness, if you don't feel well, stay home, stay out of the public. You know, putting on a mask and going to the grocery store is not always the best idea. So look at your symptoms. Check with your primary care provider. Don't just show up at the health department or the emergency room and expect to be tested. It won't happen. Again, for several reasons. One is your symptoms do not match. If they do, yes, we will be glad to test you. And we most likely will probably send you home. We will call results in our case to you. And we will tell you to self-isolate. You know, with it being a virus, the treatment is to support your symptoms. If you're tired, rest, eat, you know, feel well the best that you can. If you have a light fever, take some ibuprofen for it, kind of thing. But don't just show up and, you know, we see over 150 people a day in our emergency room. So think of how many other people you may be around that actually may have something you don't want to take home.
Scott?
And again, if you don't have a primary care provider, there's a lot of urgent cares in town that can see you. Our urgent care is open from 7 to 7. It is
7 days a week.
7 days a week. It's directly behind the emergency department, and they can see you and evaluate you or talk to you if you want to call them. But the emphasis is that if you believe you have symptoms and you're not feeling good, please do not come to the emergency department. Call your primary care provider first, get direction from them, and then we can go from there. So that's the important thing, is we're working to try to stop the spread of the virus. And the more people you come in contact with, the higher the likelihood the virus will spread. And we must flatten the curve. We must flatten the curve.
And that is a good way to end this show. So call, don't visit, when you think you have symptoms. And we're all going to get through this, but it's going to be a challenging time for a little while. So stay in touch with your healthcare providers. But thank you both, Scott and Scott,
you're welcome,
for being with us today. And thanks for the exceptional work you've done over the last several weeks between tornadoes and coronavirus.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.